nationwide. We bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Hello and welcome to Nationwide program on Radio Miraya. This is our discussion hour. And today we are focusing on the peace process, especially after the start of the period of the implementation of the roadmap, that is the extension of the transitional period for 2 years. Today we have in our studios to shed more light on this from their perspective, the ambassador and the head of the reconstituted Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, Ambassador General Charles Tai Getwai. Welcome to our studios of Radio Miraya. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Yes, the parties on the revitalized agreement on the resolution of conflict in South Sudan have on the 9th of February started the 2-year extension of the transitional period. The parties have earlier agreed on a roadmap to guide the implementation of the pending articles in the peace deal. Although being received with mixed reactions, the parties to the agreement reiterated commitment to hold national elections before the end of this extension. And of course, with me here in the studio is the head of the reconstituted Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, Ambassador Charles Tai Getwai. Now, how does the monitoring body look at the move by the parties to the agreement to extend the transitional period and using the roadmap as an implementation tool or methodology?
Thank you very much for this occasion that you have given me to be here in the studio. And thank you, listeners. First of all, I want to mention that this is a very critical moment of this country, that we've begun the extended period of the roadmap, having already completed the 36 months or so that we are envisaged to be the period of the implementation of the agreement. We start this extended period, first of all, with the ecumenical peace pilgrimage by the spiritual leaders who are here, and also the recent visit by the African Union Peace and Security Council. I want to state clearly that this is a time that the leadership in this country needs to very critically be able to look into how we are going to move within the timeline and be able to implement this agreement, and particularly this roadmap to the letter and spirit. The roadmap itself came up with key issues that it is focused on, and I want to make it clear that the roadmap is not a new agreement. The roadmap is just a question of time to implement what otherwise was not implementable within the time frame. However, there was need to come up with very specific issues that were to be focused on so that you can be able to achieve the elections. And those key issues, notwithstanding all others, were first of all the need for the constitution-making process to be completed within the timeline, and that is the base upon which this extension was based, the 24 months of the extension. The other one is the unification of forces, which is a very important requirement, so that by the time we are getting to elections, we have unified forces. And the other one, also very important, is the election process itself, because election is a process, not an event. And this calls for a lot of work and a lot of work that needs to be done to get there. And the fourth one, more importantly also, is the operationalization of the legal framework that would inform the reforms process, because again, all the laws that have been reviewed, they need to be operationalized so they can be able to work out on the process of the implementation and, of course, reforms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, if you follow the news, the president over the weekend ascended to a couple of laws related to human rights and all these. This is a follow-up of that same question. These kind of legal frameworks that are required, how does JEMEC look at this?
One is that there is, of course, this is part of the requirement in terms of the agreement implementation. Mm. The legal framework, as you, of course, know, the National Constitutional Amendment Committee is here and is supposed to work out on the legal framework to review and to look into the laws of the country and be able to come up with a reviewed process of these laws.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what they have been doing. Already they have done, if I am right, I think 17 of these laws, and they have picked about 21 of their main priority areas. Their period was extended up to May of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe by that time they will have finished the 21, and of course for any other, because basically what they did, they just picked what they thought was a priority going forward.
Ambassador Charles, the underlying factor for the roadmap is to prepare the ground for national elections. And how does RGMEC look at this possibility, given the past experiences of being pressed by time? An election is directly linked to the laws on or the mechanisms that govern the process, and it seems the Political Parties Act remains pending, or if not contentious. What do you think about this?
Well, it is true, as I have mentioned, those four key areas that were the focus for the extension of the agreement. One, and of course the main one, is the ultimate elections in this country. What we are focusing on as monitors, number one, the extension of this agreement was purely a party decision. The parties to the agreement agreed that they need to extend this period to be able to implement those very key areas. Secondly, also, the parties, after having agreed, the cabinet endorsed, or rather agreed on this, and then ultimately it was brought to us at RGMEC, and we were able to consent to this, and then it was taken back to Parliament for ratification.
Mm.
So basically here is that it is the parties themselves that gave themselves this timeline.
Mm.
They were not coerced to give themselves to inform.
Does that relieve you of any burden?
It doesn't. What I'm trying to say is that we believe that when the aspect of the decision to say that this is a period of extension and you're going to pick these particular areas of implementation, it means that, in my view, they should have done their own research to ensure that at least they'll be able to do this. Nevertheless, we see that there is need for focus on this. There is need for have a sense of urgency on this. There is need to be able to have support. And we always say that for this to happen, there is, of course, need to have a lot of pressure, and more importantly, because you are seeing a lot of gaps. There are gaps, particularly on the issue of the, for example, the constitution-making process. By this time, we should have completed the formation of the National Constitutional Review Commission. We should be now talking of the drafting committee being formed. This has not happened. It is by its schedule. Political Parties Act has not yet been established in the manner that the Political Parties Council is in place to be able to have the parties conform, those which are registered to conform to the law, and those which are not, or other parties to register. So all these are delays that we are seeing. Secondly, and more importantly, for us to proceed on this, we need to see more of the civic space and the political space, so that people can be able to be freely speak. Those other interested personnel that would like to stand for elections, they are able to move around and speak. So these are the issues that we are really much more focused on, and we begin to see that unless this happens, then we don't see how we're going to move forward. And other issue that is also very important is that there should be deliberate budgeting, so that we see a specific budget for the implementation of the agreement. One of the challenges that we are having every time we do our monitoring is that there is no funding. There is no funding for implementation of the agreement. There is no funding for unification of forces. There is no funding for everything. This is something that we think that if truly the leadership of Aratiginu is really focused, and they want to have this agreement achieved within a time frame, they need to have a deliberate sitting to come up with appropriate budgeting for this agreement to move forward.
Mm. Now, but the agreement also, as a follow-up on this, not everything requires money. So how does GEMEC put pressure in this aspect?
Well, one thing is that we, as RGMEC, we have always tried to bring about the visibility of South Sudan at the international level. We've been able to speak to, for example, the UN Peace and Security Council. Recently, I addressed the UN Peace and Security Council. I was able also to speak about the issue of funding. I've been able to meet regional leaders in several occasions, and we speak about funding. During the recent African Union Peace and Security meeting here, we spoke about strategies for funding. We had a recent meeting of the ministers for IGAD Council ministers, and all these issues of funding came about. My appeal also to the international community is to try to see how they can support South Sudan if we really want to move forward on this agreement. But more importantly, we would also like to see South Sudan commitment into this. For example, in the agreement under Article, I think, 3.2.7, it's very clear on how the South Sudan is supposed to come up with a special reconstruction fund, where they're supposed to deposit $100 million so that they can attract international support, including international pledging conference. If this could happen, it will create attraction for international community to come on board, because this is a particular article is provided for in the agreement to allow the international community to support South Sudan. But South Sudan needs to take the lead on this. The chair of this particular fund is supposed to be an international figure, with the leadership of this country also part of it. Unless this deliberate moves are made to ensure that there is funding coming on, it's going to be very, very, very challenging going forward. And this is what we say, that the agreement has provided all the requirements. It's a question of the government itself focusing and saying, this is the time that we need to mobilize this and be able to come up with this for us, for the purpose of raising funds.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Listeners to Radio Mirai, this is a Nationwide Discussion Hour, and with me is the chairperson of the Reconstituted Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, Ambassador General Charles Tai Kitwai, with me in the studio. And we move on. The JEMEC, our JEMEC plenary is coming in soon. And, of course, every month there are issues to be raised. And this first one, this one comes after the start of the 2 years of the roadmap being enacted or implemented. What is likely to come up in this next plenary?
Thank you. First of all, we plenary meeting, just perhaps to some highlight on what happened this plenary meeting. This plenary meeting is envisaged under Chapter 7 of the agreement, whereby we have 43 members who are participating in this meeting, which is mandatory. We have a group of the parties to the agreement. Basically, these are the parties. All the parties are represented, the TIGNU, the SPLM-IO, SOA, former detainees, and other political parties. They are represented. Then we have the other South Sudanese stakeholders, which is a group of entire spectrum of the South Sudanese constituency, eminent personalities, business people, academia, youth, civil society, faith-based women, and so on and so forth. And then we have regional guarantors, who basically include the African ambassadors, particularly of IGAD member states. And that also includes the AU C5, also the African Union itself, representative, and even the IGAD secretariat. And then we have the international partners, friends of South Sudan, who also participate. And this is all spectrum of the Troika, China, UN, European Union itself, United Nations, and even the IPF, what we call the IGAD Partners Forum. So basically, it's a meeting of very highly personnel, very high constituents that attend this meeting. And what happens in this meeting is that I issue a statement of the progress that has happened within the month. We get the government responding on what they have done in view of the progress of the implementation. We have the UN also giving their statement on the way they have seen the entire process of the implementation. And then we also have various members who are represented out of these 43 coming up to bring their issues of concern to the government, because the government is in the meeting, all the parties are there. And also there is another TIGNU representative, and normally it is Minister Lomuro who responds to all the questions regarding. So basically what we are saying is that this particular meeting that we are looking forward to on Thursday, 2nd of March, is going to be the meeting that is post roadmap, or rather the beginning of the roadmap. And what we want to hear from the government is their strategies, particularly on the urgency of the implementation and how they intend to really achieve this within the timeline. Every time I've been speaking to leadership, they have been saying that they are focused on the implementation within 24 months. I think on Saturday, you and the senior staff here, I listened to your conversation Saturday, and they all committed to having elections December 2024. So therefore, we would expect them to tell us exactly how they intend to work on this, how they intend to have this election achieved. And what we can say is that we need to work together. We need to see commitment of the leadership. We need to see also international community committing to this. They are representing our meeting. We need to have a specific approach that is different from normal. We need to get out of the routine and begin to have an urgency, seriously, and all of us, from the top leadership of this country, so that we focus to ensure that we get where we want to get at the end of the transition period. Right.
Yes, we will continue the discussion here on Nationwide Discussion Hour with the chairperson of the Reconstituted Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, Ambassador General Charles Tai Gitwai. And for the listeners who would like to also give comments and also ask questions, then the SMS number is 0912177141. The number again for the SMS is 0912177141. And also you can call us later on the number 0912062950 and also 0912062079, and I will be picking your calls later, and otherwise you're still on Radio Miraya.
101 FM Radio Miraya, powered by the people, uniting the nation, your preferred station, the voice of peace. Radio Miraya, Radio Miraya.
Nationwide, we bring you latest current issues, discussions, and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Yes, welcome back, and Ambassador General Charles. You mentioned a lot of participants in the RGMEC plenary, and probably these are all the bodies that were there in the revitalization process in 2017 in Addis Ababa, and they continue to move together with the peace agreement. So there is this trilateral mechanism in the process. What will be their role in this process when it comes to the roadmap, and how does the visit of the African Union Peace and Security Council relates to this?
Yes, I want to move a little bit back and tell you that first of all, the Pope's visit in this country was a significant issue that at least brought those leaders here, who we believe that they may have appealed to the conscience of the leadership in this country, and perhaps we would say that this was a huge move at that particular time. In that process, therefore, we are beginning to see some of the issues that we think are important, whereby we would like to see more reconciliation, more forgiveness, more working together of the leaders. And I want to appreciate the recent visit by the His Excellency the President to the IDPs, and also even the Vice President yesterday. I think these are some of the things that we think are positive going forward. On the matter of the trilateral, this is part of what we say, that when we work together, we get better results, and we want to be able to focus and put our efforts together and synergies together so that we can get appropriate results. Already, what this trilateral is actually the UN, the AU, the IGAD, and the RGMEC working together so that we can get better results in terms of focusing and synergizing, so that we be able to speak to the leadership here, we begin to speak to the international community, we begin to reach out there to be able to see that, yes, we want this country helped, raising visibility for South Sudan and the international community from where we sit, both as a team and also as individuals, and also bring this goodwill. And also we are talking about the idea of having more participation of IGAD now, UN now, and even IGAD. So the visit of the African Union Peace and Security Council was timely, And they came up with very specific issues that they would want this country to do. They have strategies that they lay down on how they are going to move forward, and particularly on how they intend to put, if you like, maybe more pressure or more visibility for South Sudan. We will expect also IGAD to take that position. As you know, we have been always been thinking or rather brought the idea that even IGAD itself needs to really come on board, need to come here to at least visit this country. We need to see the leaders maybe even think about a summit for South Sudan. And the idea of a summit for South Sudan is purely for South Sudan itself to share the progress that it has done. Mm. In fact, in my view, even South Sudan should be able to invite a meeting that to learn to communicate to the world out there to show them we have finished the 3 years of the Artigny. What have we done in the 3 years? We are starting the extension of 2 years. What are our strategies going forward?
Mm.
And it is in good faith that that happens. And the guarantors of this agreement are the seven heads of state because they are the ones who have signed.
Mm.
Chapter 2 is one that is guaranteed by the Republic of Uganda and Sudan. But basically, it's not that it is the only one that is guaranteed by those two countries. Indeed, during the negotiations, even other countries like Kenya and Ethiopia were part of that process. But eventually, because it was private funding for that mechanism, it's only Uganda and Sudan that was left managing this. But totally, it is the seven member states, including South Sudan, that are actually as guarantors of this agreement, and of course South Sudan being the implementer.
Mm.
So basically the issue here is that these efforts, when they are brought together with solidarity with South Sudan, will expect that to get the next step and with full throttle, so that we begin to see increased implementation, because you are actually rushing against time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Follow up of this, you have used words like focus and feasibility for South Sudan. And when I think about these words, I think also about the other dimension, the other side, which is focusing is opposite of being distracted. And it seems like there are distracting elements, distracting factors that are really putting pressure on both the monitors and also the government and everyone, preventing a smooth running of the process. And in this case, I bring up the issue of subnational violence. People say, well, this is not a fight between the signatories directly, but this is a subnational violence. It is being treated as something different, and it's not directly related to the peace process. So how can you maneuver all these things so that focusing will be something achievable?
The most critical issue, and we've always said this, is that the issues, the national communal fighting, has to do with many factors, and you know it better than me. There are factors related to revenge fighting, there's factors related to movement of cattle herders to farmers to disrupt their farming and damage their crops. There are factors related to issues of floods, whereby those people who are flooded, they move with their cattle to those people who are not flooded, and then there's a conflict. And also other factors that basically can be managed. And this is where we are now talking about the unification of forces. Because if forces were unified, they would be able now to mitigate those issues. They would be able to be deployed from a position of neutrality, because they are all unified forces. And they would be able to deal with those situations. That's why the issue of the unification of forces is related to ensuring peace and security in the country before elections. That's why actually the issue of the unification of forces was a pre-transition task, so that we have unified forces that can manage security of the country before we get there. But we are late. And that's why I would like to state here that we would like to see more effort and more focus on the unification of forces. Already, we do not know when the phase two is going to commence.
Mm.
We are hearing of challenges of even the deployment of the already graduated forces. They should be part of the unified forces now. They should be part of the in the pay list. They should be able to be forming part of the forces that are being deployed all over, including the ones that are going to Congo and elsewhere. They should also be basically be deployed in that, some of those hot spots. Mm-hmm. And with a real focus, and with this spirit of magnanimity to see this country stable, I don't see why they should not move forward. And we are very indeed pleased to hear His Excellency the President saying that there is not going to be war. These words coming from the leaders like the President himself and even the first Vice President, they give us confidence that we are moving forward. And at least what we need to do is to have that empirical evidence of ensuring that we have forces that will take care of responsibility of security. South Sudan security and stability is not only a concern for South Sudan, but also it's a concern for the region and the international community. Yeah. That's why we also say, again, let the international community also play a role in helping South Sudan move forward.
Yes. The conflict in the country is mainly a power struggle. Everybody knows that. That's the bottom line of the conflict in the country. And with the government of national unity being there, a huge government, big government, big cabinet, all these, now there are hints that of a possible reshuffle in the government, especially the cabinet, the national cabinet. But what do you think about this possibility in terms of the impact of this possibility on the implementation of the peace agreement?
Well, that is a question that perhaps you could have asked Honorable Romuro when he came here. But basically what I can say is that in accordance to the agreement has structured the government that is in the transition. The transition government is already envisaged in the agreement. And I believe there is any amendment of what is envisioned in the agreement would mean perhaps changing the agreement. So this transition agreement was only supposed to be there for that 6 months. Mm. We would be through now, and whoever will be elected president will be able to do whatever he wants to do like any other president who is elected. That is why we think that it's important that we finish this within the next 2 years so that whoever becomes president of this country can have the freedom to adjust. But now the way it is, there is a reason why it is the way it is.
Yeah.
And again, the idea of inclusivity is something that is also very important. Some of these large governments are purely to accommodate inclusivity for stability. And even not only even a government like South Sudan, which is on transition, or it's a transition government, even elected governments, sometimes they also have these large structures for the purpose of inclusivity, at least to stabilize the country, depending on the nature of the country, the situation that's in the country. So these are some of the things that are important to consider in whichever way you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Now we will have some listeners also with their reactions coming in on this discussion. With me in the studio is the chairperson of the Reconstituted Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, Ambassador General Charles Tai Gitwai, with me in the studio. And as I said, you can send your SMS on 09-121-77141, and I will be reading them to the ambassador and the chairperson of Reconstituted Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, who is with me here in the studio. Let me read some of the messages that have come in. This is from Clement Kerr Madud Aluk from Northern Bahagazal State Capital Awil. Says, my question is, how does JEMEC see this extension? And will it not be furtherly extended after the end of extension? And what could the way forward be if extended again, because extension is not new here in South Sudan? And another comment is from, he says, there is no name here, but it says South Sudanese are themselves the one who can bring peace to the country. There is no name in this. And then this is from Thomas Nelson. He says, Pope's visit will not bring peace in South Sudan unless South Sudanese themselves make it possible. And also, this is a similar question, like a sentiment on the doubt about extension. Is there an assurance that extension will not be repeated later by 2024? This is Majok Dao Ayik from Magui, I think, or Nyagwai. I don't know that area of the country. And Mabor Chuartab from Upper Nile, USB, I don't know where's URB. He says, my question to the guests, when will the unified force be deployed? Because the insecurity that is around the country is too much. And yes, those are some of the questions. Most of the letters, I mean messages that come here are about these doubts that, well, it seems the people out there, they think extension is going to happen again and again. And maybe this is for you to repeat the assurances or the messages from the monitors and those who are evaluating the peace process. Let me pick this caller and then we will come. We'll get back to our guest. Hello? Hello?
Hello, Gabriel Cesar.
Yes, welcome. Who's calling and from where?
Speaking to Samuel from Malaga.
Samuel, welcome.
Yeah, I have just a few, three questions. One question goes to the argument, and it is the question of the money always, because the government of South Sudan are always complaining that there is no fund. The agreement has not been funded. And the recently when Pop come to South Sudan, the people of South Sudan already seen that the government has money. Because renovation that has been done in South Sudan, in Juba, it's almost around $300 million. People of South Sudan are now still questioning, where is those money coming from? Then the another question is the question of the political will. They were saying that there is a political will, but this recent days, we are aware that there is a vacancy that is still open now in Unity State, in Jungle State, which is the vacancy of the speaker. And that position is for Ayo. It has been relieved by the president, and there is complaint now. Exactly. Is it really there is political will there, or people of South Sudan has been just in by blindfold and they are doing another thing? The last question is the question of gun. The gun that people are talking about, there is no gun, there is no gun. Is it is necessary that the graduation supposed to be done with new gun or the old gun? If it can be done with any gun, why don't they use the previous gun those people were using? Because when they came to containment areas, they came with their gun. Where are those guns exactly?
Okay, thanks. Thank you, caller there from Samuel from Malakal. Thanks for your calls there. Let's go to our guests in the studio and see these questions until we get back to other round of questions. Welcome, Ambassador.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate these questions from the listeners. Number one, I want to mention very clearly that the issue of the extension of the agreement roadmap was decided. I say this again. It was a decision by the parties because they are the ones that agreement provides for the parties to make that decision. And they are the ones who, in their own wisdom, realized or evaluated that they need 2 years to do that. So I do not want to doubt them. And these parties are parties that signed the agreement. The cabinet itself approved this. We consented to that because we knew that they have done this. And of course, the parliament, which is sitting, endorsed. So I want to believe that in their own wisdom, they are focused. But what I want to say is this. For this to succeed, yes, there must be deliberate efforts to provide funding. Deliberately, whatever way. They need to really focus. They need to make this a deliberate effort to prioritize these concerns from the people of South Sudan. There must be deliberate commitment on this and sufficient political will, as one of the speakers is saying. And of course, sincerity of the government. They need to be sincere. And all this is a question of this is a priority for this country. This is the way forward for this country. This is the only way we can save this country from getting back to war. Why don't you put this as a matter of priority? Why can it even be prioritized and be deliberately focused on? I am happy to hear the concerns of some of the listeners who are saying that it's South Sudanese people who can bring peace to this country. That is a very correct statement because it is a concerted effort. Each one of the South Sudanese people, each individual has a role to play. And if we collectively play our role, there will be peace because ultimately it is people who fight among themselves. So stop fighting, focus, whatever situation you are in, I believe that we are going to get out of this place. Of course, the Pope may bring goodwill to the people of South Sudan. He is the highest moral authority. He is able he has a moral clout, and therefore we who are Christians believe we should be able also to be seen to be reacting to that message of the Pope. And that is why I think
If Pope came here, he was here, and the other bishops, we know very clearly about the kissing of the feet of the leaders of South Sudan. Where else can we go? That is the highest we can go. So we believe that they have a conscience that pricks them, that they should be able now to see and be able to see this is very important for them to move forward. In terms of the appointments of leadership in this country, I think there is a profession for how leaders are appointed.
Yeah.
I believe there is a procedure for that. The only thing I would like to mention here is that if, for example, there is replacement, say, where women have been removed in appointments, it's only important that women replace them, because you have to still cling on the principle of that 5%. Otherwise, even as you do selections for the appointments, say, of the National Constitutional Review Commissions, we want to see that gender is considered, political, social, and ethnic, religious, and regional balance is considered in this, because these are the types of diverse requirements for these appointments, and it is very important we see this.
Samuel was asking about whether this argument about guns and weapons and all this for the unified forces, he was saying, like, is it why always mentioning guns when we have plenty of them in the country? Why should it be new versus old?
I think the issue here, according to the requirement of the agreement, is that those forces that are coming to the cantonments, and those forces are coming from the barracks to go for training, they should come with weapons. Ideally is that if there are forces that are out there in the field with weapons, let them bring these weapons in one place for the management, and then after that they can now go for training. We believe this phase two will involve very specific selection criteria for those who are qualified to go for training. If they come with weapons, the weapons are centralized. I hope they will be able to manage how to deal with this in terms of what you call the arms stockpiling. If there are those who are coming from the barracks where the weapons will be placed, so that now they can go for training and train properly managing these weapons. It's also part of demobilization and disarmament, because if those soldiers, let's say they are 150,000 who are coming to training, they will come with weapons. Say, for example, if it's small arms, 150,000 weapons, maybe even the long and short range and medium range weapons, they also be able to be brought as well. So this is part of disarmament, and I think it needs to be supported, and there is nothing absolutely out of the agreement on this issue. It's a question of coming the weapons, that is very well provided for in the agreement. So basically that is the point why there is this question of that they must come with weapons. The first phase one, they did not come with weapons. We believe now that the JDB and those mechanisms that are responsible for this, they will be able to take in consideration all the lessons learned of phase one and put in a phase two, so that phase two will be much more smoother, much more procedural, much more structured, and it will be able to achieve its objective within a time frame. Right.
Now, we are approaching the last minutes, and if there are no callers on the lines on this show, we have also the MTN line, which is 0929686297. You can call that line also. Let me see if there are... Now, there is a question from Gatwich Manyel from Juba Town. He says, my question, what are the next processes to you as chairperson who is monitoring the implementation of the peace in South Sudan?
Well, one is that we want to be able to closely monitor the roadmap, and we are very much seized on this matter. We are focusing on those very critical issues that the roadmap envisaged. One, we want to see the constitution-making process done within the timeline, within the time frame. We are looking at, of course, the organizations I've just mentioned, the formation of these very critical institutions, where they're going to follow the procedures as per the requirement. We also forecast to see the processes of the unification of forces that are very critical. We are also monitoring the issues of the election processes and how they are being developed, and more so also the operationalization of the reviewed laws and how they are going to be to embrace reforms in the country. We are also looking on to how or the civic and the political space is going to be developed. Because we believe that if we are talking about going to campaigns, I'm already seeing a lot of campaigns going on. We need to see much more of the political and civic space being provided for. Mm-hmm. And I think this country has got a very elaborate civil society, and I don't see what would be any threat for people speaking freely. Mm-hmm. And we also appreciate the recent law that His Excellency the President, the first Vice President, the law on the national security, whereby they decided to remove the issue of the arrest and also the issue of the detention without that, to me, is a huge achievement for this country. And if it is actually implemented, then you begin to see the political space becoming a reality.
Mm-hmm. And one of the listeners here, Kong Guy Biet from Unity State, is just asking you to blow your own trumpet and say what are the achievements you're proud of as JMEC at this juncture.
Well, I think we as RJMEC, if perhaps anyone would say, we have kept this country at international visibility. We have been able to be involved in speaking at the level of the UN for this South Sudan, at the level of the African Union for South Sudan, IGAD for South Sudan. We have been instrumental in many issues, including a bit of unlocking disputes or party disputes, what we call deadlocks. We have been able to work on those. We have been able to keep on putting the, particularly our plenary meetings that come up with the solutions that help the country to move forward. We have the opportunity to address the cabinet. We've done that. And we also have the opportunity to address the parliament. We are able to bring our voice as an institution that is responsible for monitoring and evaluating this agreement, to be able to have the agreement alive. We have also been able to look into how the day-to-day activities of the implementation is going on. And we have been able to keep the implementers, focusing on it. Because Chapter 7, the RJMEC is a creature of this agreement. It is mandated to oversee the implementation of this agreement. And you cannot do without Chapter 7, which is basically the focal point. You can say we are the referees, if you like, who are observing and seeing how the game is being played.
Yeah.
And therefore, our role is very critical. And we have the mandate. We can enter any office in the world if we want to. We have been able to address, speak to the ends of state of the region on issues of South Sudan. We are positive. We are impartial. And we basically work to ensure that we focus and put the country into focus on this implementation agreement.
Yeah. Ambassador General Charles Taiye Twai, from the 10 messages I received from our listeners, at least 5 or 6 of them, this is like 50%, are really having doubts about the extension. And this is might be an indicator that there is a general perception that there is something that the people want more to be assuring in the implementation. And this, I give you the last message to send out to the listeners.
First of all, I want to make it very clear that RJMEC is not an implementing agency. RJMEC is a monitoring institution. And that is why I say that the extension was a party decision, and they decided on the two years, 24 months. RJMEC would be able to only follow up that particular commitment to the people of South Sudan that within 2 years they will be able to implement the agreement. I want to believe that people of South Sudan need to be patient, and they also need to support. They also need to support this process, even support it in spirit. Because that is where we are. And the government is legitimized by this agreement. The reason why that extension was important, because it amended Article 1.1.2 of this agreement. Now, the issue of the 36 months of the agreement is extended to 60 months of the transition period. So the government is legal within the framework of the 60 months extension. And that is a decision which is legal within the Article 8.4 of the agreement. Therefore, the extension is legal. The period is decided by the parties, and we believe that these parties will be able to work within the time frame. We are monitors, and therefore, the only thing we can do is to ensure that we ask questions. Are you working according to the agreement? We have seen delays, no doubt about that. For example, the constitution framework is behind schedule. By now, we'll be having the National Constitutional Review Commission in place. It is not there. By now, we would have finished phase two of the unification force. It is not there. So that is where we are putting pressure at all levels, at the international level, at our level, at the trilateral level, you said, IGAD level, AU level, UN level, and all the international community. And that is our role, to ensure that we keep this spirit alive for the agreement to be implemented.
Ambassador General Charles Tai Getwai, thanks for your time, thanks for your patience, and also thanks for all the informative information that you have given us today. Until we see you in another update on your role as the chairperson of the reconstituted Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and thank you, listeners, and thank you for your questions.
Thank you. And that is the end of today's discussion hour on Nationwide Program on Radio Maria. With me, Gabriel Shadar. Thanks for listening.
Nationwide, your daily current affairs program on Radio Miraya.